They look like headphones, and they may even play music. But what's inside are electrodes that stimulate the human brain, making an uptick in performance possible. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with a neuroscientist about his new device that stimulates the brain and helps athletes get that extra performance edge. That starts now.
Hello and thanks for listening. Let's talk about transcranial electrical stimulation this week. That's tiny charges of electricity zapped into the cerebral cortex of the brain. The electricity can, according to much research, help the body and brain remember those movements that you're practicing at a faster rate. Think of an elite athlete and the fierce competition that can be at that level. A 1% increase in efficiency of motion or rhythm or pattern could be the daylight needed for the, quote, win, end quote. Halo Neuroscience is a hardware startup that is picking up high-profile customers as well as financial backing from venture capitalists. And its co-founder has medical tech experience, having started a previous brain implant to help with epileptic seizures.
It's through, in this case, physical training repetitions. So for an athlete, what we ask is wear it for 20 minutes, generally during your warm-up. Right after the session is done, then jump straight into your training and feed that motor cortex deliberate, thoughtful physical training repetitions.
And before we get going, here's the form factor of the Halo Neuroscience device. The Halo Sport looks like a hefty pair of headphones that feature three sections of rubber spikes on the inside of the headband. Those are called primers. They are designed to deliver a small electrical current through the scalp and into the brain while the wearer practices anything, fitness and exercise, music, even foreign languages. Okay, here we go.
Daniel Chow, CEO of Halo Neuroscience.
How did you come about with this idea?
So this particular idea was really inspired by the medical literature. So there were a group of scientists using neurostimulation, specifically neurostimulation of the motor cortex, so this special part of the brain that controls movement in our bodies. And they were able to show in a disease model, also in a healthy model, and I'll get into both of these in a second, that they can increase the rate of motor learning, movement learning, if they stimulated the motor cortex paired with movement training. On the disease side, they found that if they took stroke victims who had some kind of motor disability, so specifically in this case, the loss of use of their hands or arms, that with physical therapy paired with neurostimulation, they can increase the rate at which these people recover and also raise the ceiling of what recovery was possible. And then on the healthy side, healthy individuals, they were able to show in these very basic but also like very rigorously tested movement learning paradigms that you can increase the rate at which these people learn movement if you pair that movement training with neurostimulation. So it was really this body of work that led us to this product.
Let's talk about plasticity too, because I think that kind of goes here and that'll help me understand and get it.
Yeah, so let's talk about like what is going on with this technology.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so this technology, the scientific term of this technology is called transcranial direct current stimulation, or TDCS. TDCS has been known to increase plasticity. So generally a 20-minute session with TDCS over some region of brain that you want to induce this temporary state of hyperlearning or hyperplasticity is what's required.
We've had other people on the show talk about different ways to get into a flow. Mm-hmm. Is this something that creates a hyperflow or a hypersensitivity to adaptive methods?
Flow, I think, is like this loosely used term.
A lot of
people have a different idea as to what flow is. Oftentimes, flow is used in an athletic context where a player is on fire, right? Like Michael Jordan at his peak of athletic performance just couldn't miss. And people call that state a flow state.
Okay.
You know, I think most people think of a flow state as, you know, the state of hyperfocus, the state of hyperarousal with this groundedness to it, with this calmness to it as well. And they also associate it with a run of extreme performance. Could neurostimulation induce a flow state? So if that's the question, potentially. So probably not the motor cortex. It's probably a different part of the brain that's important for cognitive control. So our ability to control the cognitive processes in our brain so that we are more attentive to the task that we want to pay attention to. Like all the distractions around us just pushed to the side.
I see.
The roar of the crowd, little things happening in our body that don't matter.
Right.
I'm just thinking about Michael Jordan again.
Right.
Like, what was going on in his brain that allowed him to perform at that level when the pressure was highest?
Right.
It was cognitive control.
You also did some work with epilepsy?
Yeah. So just a little bit about me personally. So Halo Neuroscience is actually my second neurostimulation company. My first neurostimulation company, a company called NeuroPace. That was a decent chunk of my life, almost 10 years of my life, where we developed, it's akin to a pacemaker, but for the brain. And the medical indication for that device was to treat seizure disorders, or commonly known as epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
So there, you know, it was a really amazing experience to see that we can bring a technology to help people with epilepsy where drugs have failed these people for decades on end. The drugs don't work very well. They're also riddled with side effects. And we come along and develop a technology that basically uses electricity as medicine
mm-hmm.
to help these people in a way that's far more dramatic and effective than what you could do with drugs.
And that had to be implanted in the brain, correct?
So that's the downside. So it's a medical implant involving electrodes literally inserted into the brain.
Uh-huh.
And the pulse generator, which is the size of a small matchbox, literally implanted in the skull. You're right. This is not for mild cases of epilepsy. This right. is only reserved for very severe refractory cases of epilepsy.
Dan, in a macro kind of way, you're using electricity as medicine in an expanding field at a time when wearables have been kind of not the analyst's favorite thing going on right now. So what are you finding when it comes to electricity being adopted as medicine?
Let's talk about electricity as medicine, because I think for most people, this is a really novel concept, but it's been around for 20 years. And it's actually a pretty big industry. It's about, if you roll up annual sales for all the different neurostimulation products, it's mm-hmm. about $8 billion a year. But they're all medical implants. So we're talking about deep brain stimulators for Parkinson's disease or essential tremor. We're talking about spinal cord stimulators for chronic pain. My last company, a medical implant to treat epilepsy. So relatively few numbers of companies, but really big franchises. And when you add it all up, it's about $8 billion a year. So we're really excited about this field, obviously, because
mm-hmm.
right? the brain needs something other than drugs for us to use as a therapeutic modality. So we like the concept of wearable neurostimulators. So instead of a medical implant, what if we could build neurostimulators where patients and even healthy people can benefit from neurostimulation, but without the surgery? So you're right. Wearables is this category that I think has been successful. And, you know, Fitbit is still a success. It's still a billion-dollar company. But it's also an industry where, you know, people are questioning the value
right.
of a wearable. Like, you know, what is this data and what are we going to do with it? So we're specifically not that kind of wearable.
Okay.
We're not a data wearable. We're actually going the opposite direction. We're a stimulator wearable.
Mm-hmm, right.
We're delivering energy to the body to augment function.
Okay. And that was the old company and a lot of research. You said 10 years spent on it, so you're kind of the expert. This form factor here, though, is not invasive. Just as I look at it, and if you need to see a picture, it's at kgoradio.com as well as other links in the story that goes with this week's show. It basically looks like a really cool set of headphones, maybe a little bit bigger than a Beats, with stimulators. Is that what we would call those?
Yeah, so if folks go to the website, they could see a picture of Halo Sport. And you're right, it looks like a regular set of headphones. But what's different about them is if they look at the underside of the arch, they'll see they look spiky, but they're made out of soft foam, so they're not hard. We call them primers. So we call the technology neuro-priming, like you're priming your brain.
Yeah.
And so therefore, we call these primers. But between you and me, Jason, and your listeners, these are electrodes. This part is connected to a circuit board buried into one of the ear cups. And the circuit board has its own battery and a Bluetooth chip to communicate to an app on your phone. And that's how you control the neurostimulator. So through these primers, emit an electric field. And this electric field is strong enough to get through the skull while gently interacting with your brain. And in the case of Halo Sport, it's the motor cortex of your brain.
You put this on your head and it does kind of prime the pump in a way for your brain to receive the repetitive actions you're about to undertake. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. So it primes the brain into the state where it can learn at an accelerated rate. And what you do with that learning is through practice. It's through, in this case, physical training repetitions.
Mm-hmm.
So for an athlete, what we ask is wear it for 20 minutes, generally during your warm-up. Right after the session is done, then jump straight into your training and feed that motor cortex deliberate, thoughtful physical training repetitions. And our promise to our users is that they will learn that movement faster. You know, think about traditional sports, shooting three-pointers, shooting free throws. A lot of that is based on repetition.
Right.
Think about swinging a baseball bat or pitching a baseball. Like, a lot of that is repetition. Let's go beyond traditional sports. Like, let's think about the military and what they need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Military is actually our biggest customer. So, like, the physical skills that's required to become a special operator, it's this very long, arduous training program that, you know, is kind of famous and celebrated now. Think about musicians. So we think of musicians as athletes. You know, think about a violinist or a guitarist and the technical movements that's required to produce music. So not the creative or emotional side, but the physical side. We could help accelerate the rate at which these people learn that movement.
During my research, I see one huge photo of a ski jumper coming through here. What kind of training have you seen being applied to your technology?
We're really proud to be partners of the United States Ski and Snowboard Association. We have been working with them for several years now, leading up to PyeongChang, getting to know these athletes and what they're up against. Many of them are not allowed to practice that much. It's a product of their sport. So for ski jumping, they're lucky to get 3 reps in an hour. Because you got to hike back up and you go down and you review tape after every jump. So every 20 minutes is about how often they get a repetition. So it's very different from shooting free throws where you can knock down 100 free throws in an hour. So for these athletes, every rep is precious. So what can we do to maximize the learning from each rep? We can use neurostimulation. You know, that's one use case. Another use case was some of the folks on the cross-country side. So you might ask, like, oh, so what is an endurance athlete doing with neurostimulation? So with an endurance athlete, cross-country skiing, marathon running, Tour de France, for these athletes, it's biomechanical efficiency. If they can learn the skill of being more biomechanically efficient with their skiing technique, with their cycling technique, with their running technique, if they're 1% more efficient in their technique, they just won. I mean, that is the difference. What in their sport, it is literally 1% or less that separates the top athlete from the 25th athlete.
We've been talking about kind of elite athletes. Is there another use case, a little more everyday kind of thing?
The data shows that the more novice you are, the more you can get from this technology.
Oh.
So even though we are known for working with elite athletes, they are actually pretty close to their genetic ceiling. So their opportunity for improvement is razor thin. Now, if you take a relative novice, they're still on that juicy part of the learning curve. So we can actually lift that rate of learning to a greater degree than we can for an elite athlete. If there's a novice guitar player or a novice basketball player, the use case there is actually probably better than for an elite athlete. Now, why is there such uptake at the highest level? Well, this is their job. We actually have more weekend warriors using this technology than elite users.
And what kind of adoption curve have you seen so far?
We try to take the difficulty out. You know, with the technology, all you have to do is first you need to wet the primers so that you can make an electrical contact.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just use tap water for that. You put this on your head like a regular set of headphones and start it with your app. I mean, I'm proud to say that we've got thousands of people out there, non-neuroscientists, doing motor cortex neurostimulation. Yeah, taking a step back, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that thought would have been inconceivable before we brought Halo Sport to the world.
Low barrier to entry.
Yeah.
To get it used.
Yeah. So they play music. So if you're used to listening to music while you warm up, we've got that covered too. So
are you plowing whatever you can get back into the technology? Are you trying to lower price points and availability to more people? I understand that there's a ton of tech involved in there that you got to pay for that. I'm just wondering about if that's a barrier for you for wider adoption.
Yeah, it is. It's a pricey product. $750 is it's expensive, but it's a neurostimulator. And you're right. Like, there's a lot that goes into this. As we grow as a company, we will definitely lower the price. We will introduce other products that come down in price.
Mm-hmm.
So most competitive athletes are young. And if they're in college, they don't really have the money to afford $749 product. So yeah, we want to bring the product down in price. And, you know, we are known as a sports performance company today, but we see ourselves as a human performance company. We're brain stimulation experts. We're very good at stimulating the motor cortex, but there's other brain regions that we're interested in. not to spill company secrets on your show, but you could look forward to we could look forward to other products that help with human learning, right? Like, you know, just think about your life and the kinds of things you would want in your life, but
maybe even classroom applications for younger people.
Yeah, sure. Or you know, just like, again, let's personalize this. Think about the things that you would want in your life, but you don't start the learning process because it would take too long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say you want to learn how to speak Italian or play guitar.
That's right.
You know, both of those things maybe are things that you're interested in learning, but you're like, wow, you know, that's 10 years. What would you start learning today if the 10,000 rule was now the 1,000 hour rule?
Uh-huh. One other application that fits into my brain. We had recently the director of a Stanford virtual reality human interaction program here. Would you be able to use this in a virtual situation as well? Would your brain accept both stimuli?
I think so. It's not a use case today, but let's talk about the future. It's been shown scientifically that if you put someone in an MRI scanner where you can look inside the brain and see what it's doing, and you ask this individual to visualize movement, so doing, like, if you're a golfer, you're just visualizing your golf swing or whatever you're trying to practice. If you just visualize that, but without moving, your motor cortex is actually lighting up like a Christmas tree. That's really interesting. You're almost getting free physical repetitions without actually having to put load on your body. So what if we could augment that with VR, right? And you pair that with neurostimulation. So could you do motor learning without movement, enhanced by neurostimulation, enhanced by VR? The data supporting this is very thin.
Mm-hmm.
It's suggestive, but very thin. So I just want to put that out there.
Sure.
That it deserves more scientific investigation, and it's definitely a path for the future.
Dan, you're pioneering in a new field, largely not much exposure for every person yet on this technology. Are you seeing any obstacles on the safety side? Are you seeing any obstacles from the regulators or from any kind of legal?
Yeah. So let's talk about safety, because you're right. We should take a step back, and we're using electric fields to interact with your brain. It's novel and new. The conversation around safety should be a conversation around data. So we've collected data in a sham-controlled way on over 2,000 subjects. And in our hands, with our technology, we cannot identify any safety risk to the people that have participated in our trials.
Okay.
And since launching the product, we've collected data on over 100,000 stimulation sessions. Again, safety profile is being reinforced with this data. If you look at the medical literature, there's been about 3,000 papers published on this topic, hundreds of thousands of subjects covered, some subjects with continuous use for years on end. And the published literature all really point towards a safe and efficacious device.
What about the legal side? You've navigated regulation before with your previous company, right? So you knew how to steer through these channels. Are you having any difficulty there?
You're right. So I'm a medical device guy, and I'm used to the vast majority of my professional career was on the regulated side. So the governing body here is the FDA.
Okay.
The FDA knows about this technology and deemed it a consumer appropriate technology, so long as, you know, we're careful with our marketing. So we're very careful in saying that it's not a medical device and it doesn't treat any medical disorders, and that we're below a certain amplitude. So there's a threshold to what they will allow. So we're comfortably below that threshold.
How long has this product been available for popular purchase?
Since November 16, a little over a year now.
It seems like a wide adoption for a niche device at its present price point, of course, but the adoption from the people that you're getting it from is quite impressive.
Yeah. So we're seeing not just athletes, but coaches and trainers really picking on this. So like really sophisticated thinkers in human performance on the athletic side. And of course, I mentioned the military, and we've got surgeons. So medical universities training surgeons with this, commercial airlines training pilots with this. Yeah. So the use cases are really far broader than just traditional athletics.
If we stay with the coaches thing for a second there, I remember the conversation I had about the virtual reality lab and the San Francisco 49ers quarterbacks using that as part of their practice thing too. You have somebody maybe on the Giants that uses this technology?
Yeah, so the Giants are one of our big users. You know, they're our local team, so we're proud to be working with them. And like, I really love the way we started with the Giants because it was very organic. So it was the coaching staff that reached out. Jeff Head, who's the head of sports science for the Giants, reached out, and we designed a pilot program. We took a bunch of athletes and half used Halo, half didn't. We trained them up and we did before and after testing, and we could just show with data very conclusively that the group that trained with Halo did better than the group that didn't. And from that, it led to a proposal all the way up to Larry Baer, got approval for funding, and the next thing you know, we're rolling this out with a decent chunk of the team.
Dan, I'm really excited about this product. Congratulations. It's amazing, and it's going to be fun to watch it grow and get more adoption, and I hope you can come back in and talk with us about that, Dan.
Yeah, I'd love to.
That was Dr. Daniel Chow, co-founder of Halo Neuroscience and the transcranial electrical stimulation device known as the Halo Sport. You can find the extended, uncut version of this interview on iTunes or on KGORadio.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Just keyword search Techonomics. For links to the Halo and other neuroscience resources, just look for the show notes that go with this week. They live at KGORadio.com too. Coming up after the break, the president of the Oakland Athletics talks to us about managing a high debt load while trying to build his team a new ballpark.
And so you need to be very creative about a transportation plan. And so that's why we're looking at all sorts of varieties, like everything from an aerial gondola to a rubber-tired tram to shuttle service to bike and walk options to ferries.
That's next. So stick around. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.